Hear the Heart podcast takes the eternal truths of the Bible and applies them to everyday life. These podcasts are built by modern tools applied to ancient truths. We hope the discussions are helpful for you as you listen.
I want you to imagine just for a second being completely stranded in the vast, unforgiving expanse of the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, man.
Right? Like, there is no land in sight, nothing but the horizon, the relentless beating of the sun, and the terrifying realization that you are entirely alone.
And you aren't just there for an afternoon. You are stuck out there, completely at the mercy of the currents, for 438 days.
Yeah.
It is a level of isolation that the human brain can barely comprehend.
Over a year.
Yeah.
Just drifting. I mean, it's the ultimate physical nightmare.
Absolutely.
But according to the sources we are looking at today, there's a psychological drift that is just as deadly, outlined in a 2,000-year-old letter from the Apostle Paul.
Yeah, and the culprit in both of these stories, like the modern survival nightmare and the ancient warning, is the exact same thing. It is the lack of a single invisible tool.
It is such a profound parallel. Today, we're analyzing a deeply moving message by preacher Daryl Handy. He takes the harrowing, true survival story of a fisherman named Salvador Alvarenga, and he overlays it onto a biblical text.
Specifically, 2 Timothy 4.1-5.
Exactly. And our mission is to explore how we can anchor our own minds and hearts against the inevitable storms of life.
Which is so important.
It really is. And this ties directly into the core goal of the Hear the Heart mission, which is all about learning to live so deeply anchored in God's truth that we can genuinely hear, understand, and reflect compassion to others who are, you know, out there navigating their own terrifying storms.
Because the reality is, you cannot be a stable, comforting presence for someone else if your own boat is taking on water.
Well,
if you are drifting aimlessly, you just can't throw a lifeline to anyone else.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the physical story of that oceanic drift is incredibly visceral, and we really need to understand the mechanics of what actually went wrong.
Yeah, set the scene.
So it's November 2012. Two men, Salvador Alvarenga and Ezequiel Cordoba, are hired for a deep-sea fishing trip off the coast of Chiapas, Mexico.
Okay.
And initially, it is a massive, unprecedented success. Like, they pull in over 1,000 pounds of fish.
That is a phenomenal haul.
Huge.
But the ocean is notoriously unpredictable. A massive storm rolls in, and it doesn't just pass over them in a few hours. It beats on their small 25-foot fiberglass skiff relentlessly for 5 straight days.
5 days of getting hammered by waves that are literally the size of buildings.
Unbelievable.
It throws them completely off course and severely damages their boat. And the next time Alvarenga actually sets foot on solid ground, it is 438 days later.
Wow.
He washes up 6,700 miles away in the Marshall Islands.
He became the first person ever recorded in human history to survive over a year drifting at sea in a small boat.
Just incredible.
But the details of how he ended up in that horrific situation, that's where Handy's message hits so hard. Because it wasn't just bad weather. It was a catastrophic systemic cascade of lacking preparation.
Yeah, when you look at the manifest of what they didn't have, it is shocking. I mean, their boss sent them out in a boat with a single motor.
No backup at all.
None. They had no running lights. They had barely any way to communicate once they were out of initial radio range.
They didn't even have oars.
Yeah. No oars.
And crucially, fundamentally, they had no anchor.
I want to pause on that because mechanically, an anchor isn't just for parking your boat when you want to go swimming.
Right. It has a functional purpose in a crisis.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
In a violent storm, a sea anchor creates drag. It keeps the bow of the boat pointed into the crashing waves so they break over the front.
It gives you stability.
Yeah. Without an anchor to create that tension, a boat will naturally turn sideways, broadside to the waves, which is exactly how you capsize and die.
Precisely. Once that single motor failed and they were out of radio range, they lost all ability to dictate their direction.
They were just helpless.
Entirely at the whim of the Pacific currents. They had to survive by catching raw fish with their bare hands, grabbing seabirds that landed on the boat, and drinking turtle blood when it didn't rain.
Ugh. The psychological toll of that kind of drift is almost unimaginable.
Completely.
The relentless loop of what ifs playing in your head on day 30, day 100, day 300. Like, why didn't we demand an extra radio? Why didn't we bring an anchor?
It's the sheer terror of realizing right when the unexpected crisis hits that you lack the most basic tools for survival.
Yeah.
And there is a tragic contract in this story that Handy brings to light. Alvarenga's survival is inspiring to the world, but it is also a grave warning.
Because he wasn't alone.
Exactly. There were two men on that boat. Ezequiel Cordoba did not survive.
Somewhere along that grueling 13-month journey, the internal storm just overtook the external one.
It really did.
He lost hope, he became delirious, he stopped eating, and he passed away.
It highlights a devastating truth. You know, survival isn't just about the physical circumstances you find yourself in.
Yeah.
It is deeply tied to your internal state. When the hope runs out, the body often follows. The mind has to be anchored to something beyond the immediate suffering, or it will simply shut down.
And they sacrificed their maneuverability for their success.
Oh, that's a great point.
There is a detail from their first few days in the storm that perfectly illustrates this.
Yeah.
To survive those massive waves, to keep that small boat from sinking immediately under its own weight, they had to dump their catch.
Wow.
They had to manually throw all 1,000 pounds of fish overboard.
The very thing they went out there to get.
Exactly.
The undeniable evidence of their hard work and success gone.
It makes me wonder how often we do the exact same thing in our own lives, right? Like in our careers or our relationships.
Oh, for sure.
We hold on to our catch, our stubborn plans, our prized possessions, our obsession with a specific kind of success. But when a real storm hits, a medical diagnosis, a financial collapse, a profound loss, we suddenly realize that our success is the exact thing sinking our boat.
It becomes a liability.
Yes. We hold on so tight to our 1,000 pounds of fish, but we completely forget to pack an anchor.
We cling to what we think gives us value, but in a crisis, survival requires letting go of the excess weight. It requires stripping down to the absolute essentials.
And that exact vulnerability, you know, having a boat full of success but no way to secure it in the storm, is the core of the spiritual warning the Apostle Paul issues in 2 Timothy.
Yes, Paul is writing to his young protege, Timothy, and we have to remember the context of who Paul is.
Right, he's not just guessing.
He isn't just a philosopher speaking from an ivory tower. He is backed by his own miraculous, brutal experiences. From his radical conversion in Acts 9 to his confirmation as a missionary in Acts 13, Paul has survived literal shipwrecks.
Multiple shipwrecks.
He has survived beatings, imprisonment, and profound opposition.
So when Paul speaks about storms, he has the unshakable credibility of someone who has weathered the absolute worst of them.
Exactly.
And he is issuing a stark, uncompromising warning to Timothy about a cultural and spiritual storm that is definitely coming.
He writes, "For the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching." And Handy emphasizes a crucial grammatical distinction here.
What's that?
Paul didn't say people might not endure it. He didn't say there's a 50-50 chance. He said they will not.
It's a guarantee. It's like the Coast Guard radioing that a Category 5 hurricane is heading straight for your exact coordinates. It is not a drill.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the phrasing Paul uses next is a masterclass in human psychology.
Okay, lay it on me.
He says, instead of enduring sound teaching, people will have itching ears, and they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions.
Man, it is honestly eerie how accurately that describes the modern digital age.
Oh, totally.
We are the first generation in human history to have an algorithmic infrastructure built entirely around scratching our itching ears.
It's a design for it.
We can endlessly pile up podcasts, TikTok feeds, YouTube channels, and custom hashtags that do nothing but echo our own opinions back to us.
We curate our own reality to an extreme degree, and we often do it to validate our vices, our excesses, and our deepest insecurities.
Right.
If you want someone to tell you that your toxic behavior is actually just setting boundaries, or that your selfish desire is totally justified, you can find 100 voices on the internet right now to validate you. You can scratch that itch on demand.
But let me look at this from a biological angle, because I want to push back on the idea that this makes us inherently malicious.
Okay, sure.
When we are suffering, when our boat is actually taking on water and our cortisol levels are spiking through the roof, isn't it a completely natural biological instinct to seek out voices that lower our anxiety?
Well, yeah.
So why is it so dangerous to want a teacher who soothes us when we are terrified?
You're entirely right that it is a deeply human biological instinct to seek safety and comfort. Our brains crave homeostasis.
Right. We want to feel okay.
But Handy makes a profound counterpoint about the difference between soothing and saving. He points out that teachers who just suit our passions don't actually take us beyond our passions.
Oh, they just keep us trapped in the same emotional loop.
Exactly. Rubbing our sensitive ears might lower our cortisol in the moment. It feels incredibly soothing. But if that voice is just echoing what you already want to hear, rather than telling you the objective truth of where you are on the map, it keeps you drifting.
Wow.
It is comfort without a compass. Sound teaching, truth, often feels uncomfortable because it demands that we face reality. It protects us from our own passions that would run rampant and capsize us if left unchecked.
So comfort that just affirms our drifting isn't actually helping us survive the storm. It's just making us feel slightly warmer while the boat fills with freezing water.
That's a great way to put it.
And Handy points out the inevitable next step in Paul's warning. When we turn away from the truth to scratch our itching ears, Paul says people will wander off into myths.
Myths. These are widely held beliefs or narratives that help us make sense of the world, but which lack any firm connection to objective reality. And Handy doesn't just keep this abstract. He gives some really relatable, everyday examples of how we actively create myths to make sense of a chaotic life.
Like what?
Like weather myths. You know, the old childhood idea that thunder just means God is sleeping or snoring up in the clouds.
Oh, right. Or health myths. The pervasive idea that all fat and all cholesterol are 100% evil, when actual nutritionists and biologists will tell you that the human body requires a baseline amount of both just for your cells to function.
Or the ultimate pop psychology myth.
Which one?
The one that says human beings only use 10% of our brains.
Yes, that one is everywhere.
It is. And it is so seductive because it implies we all have superpowers just waiting to be unlocked without any actual effort.
What's fascinating here is why these myths matter on a practical level. It is very easy to dismiss them as harmless little stories we tell ourselves to pass the time.
Right, they seem innocent.
But Handy emphasizes that myths are rarely harmless because false narratives inevitably change how we live and how we act.
It alters our behavior. If you believe the map says there's an island to the north, you're going to paddle north, even if the map is a total fabrication.
Exactly. Think about the weather myth. If you truly internalize the belief that a thunderstorm means the all-powerful God is sleeping or unaware, then you aren't going to pray during the storm, are you?
No. You'd think it was a massive waste of time.
Or the diet myth. If you believe all fat is evil, you might pursue incredibly destructive, restrictive diets that actually ruin your health while you think you're saving it.
Yeah.
If you believe false origin myths about the world, it completely changes how you view your ethical responsibility to steward the earth and treat other human beings.
Our beliefs dictate our actions. Believing in comforting myths when you are in a crisis is literally like rowing furiously in the wrong direction when you are already lost at sea.
You're just wasting energy.
Yeah, you exert massive amounts of energy. You feel a false sense of accomplishment because you are moving, but you are actively making yourself more lost.
Which is terrifying.
The only cure for this wandering, desperately scratching mind is to drop a massive anchor of truth.
And that brings us to the practical application in verse 5. Paul doesn't just diagnose the problem. He gives Timothy the exact blueprint for the anchor.
Right.
He gives 4 distinct commands to combat this drift. As for you, always be sober-minded, endure suffering, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry.
But having a clear head isn't enough when the waves are physically battering you.
Yeah.
When Handy talks about being sober-minded, he's clearly not just talking about abstaining from alcohol.
No, not at all.
He's talking about a relentless cognitive grip, right?
Yes. A sober mind is defined here as having a vice-like grasp on truth. It means having the discipline to control your thoughts so they don't spiral down uncertain, anxiety-ridden paths.
That is so hard to do.
It is. A person with a loose mind, someone whose thoughts are scattered, constantly chasing every random hashtag or culturally popular opinion, simply cannot hold tightly to truth when the waves hit.
It's having your hands firmly planted on the steering wheel of your own brain.
Yeah.
But then Paul immediately pairs that with the command to endure suffering, which on the surface feels like a really discouraging command. Like, hey, glad you're sober-minded. Now go out there and suffer.
It sounds entirely counterintuitive to our modern sensibilities. We want to escape suffering, not endure it.
Exactly.
But Handy explains that enduring suffering is actually the physical and emotional stamina required to maintain that sober mind. Because what is suffering, really? It is a violent assault on our brains, our emotions, and our physical bodies.
Yeah, when you lose a loved one, or when you lose your career, that pain is screaming for your absolute attention.
Oh, absolutely.
It demands to be the loudest voice in the room.
It does. Suffering tempts us to loosen our grip on our foundational commitments. It distracts us.
Right.
Enduring suffering means recognizing that overwhelming temptation to give up and choosing to hold on to the anchor of truth anyway. It means holding on when your emotional muscles are completely giving out, when it hurts, and especially when you don't feel grateful or happy about it.
That stamina is what separates surviving the storm from being swallowed by it.
Well said.
And then Paul says, do the work of an evangelist.
This raises an important question, particularly regarding the Hear the Heart mission we discussed at the beginning.
Okay.
How do we apply these ante commands when we are interacting with other human beings who are currently drifting, who are terrified and lost at sea?
This is where the concept of compassion becomes the entire ballgame. Because doing the work of an evangelist, living out your faith, is not about being pushy.
Not at all.
It is not about standing on the deck of your safe, anchored ship and screaming theological instructions through a megaphone at someone who is drowning.
That is the exact opposite of the mission.
Yeah.
As Handy notes, it is about being winsome. It is about an abundance of patience. It requires us to deeply understand and validate the real-world hesitation people have when it comes to faith or truth.
Because people are battered. When someone's life feels upside down, when they are suffering and adrift, they are incredibly vulnerable.
They're exhausted.
They have likely been burned by false teachers before. The very people Paul warned about who scratched their itching ears and then abandoned them.
Right.
If you listen to this show, or if you consider yourself someone who wants to help others, you have to recognize that hesitation is a self-defense mechanism.
If we approach them without profound compassion, if we just hurl heavy truths at them without first seeking to hear, understand, and encourage their heart, we aren't helping them find an anchor.
No.
We are just becoming another piece of debris hitting them in the storm.
That is such a vital centering point for everyone listening right now. Handy makes it abundantly clear.
Yeah.
This isn't just a set of specialized instructions for professional preachers or pastors.
Right. It's for everyone.
This is a calling for you, the listener. Mm-hmm. It is a calling for the entire community.
We all have a baseline responsibility to be anchored.
And we all need to have grace and compassion for each other. And crucially, compassion for those in leadership, too.
Yeah.
Handy specifically points out that placing impossibly high expectations on a preacher or a leader without offering them any compassion is a setup for absolute failure.
Preachers and leaders endure suffering, too. They face the exact same storms, the same cultural pressures, and the same temptations to find voices that soothe them.
They're human.
Exactly. A healthy community needs to support them, to actively pray for them to remain sober-minded, and to be an environment that actually values the hard truth over just having our ears continuously tickled.
We have to ruthlessly guard what we let into our own ears so that we can be a stable, anchored presence for the people we love. You cannot pull your friend, your spouse, or your child out of the turbulent water if you're actively drowning in your own customized echo chambers and comforting myths.
It demands a fierce commitment to objective truth. It requires a willingness to endure the sharp discomfort of reality and an overflowing, resilient patience for those who are still struggling to find their bearings in the dark.
Okay, let's pull all of this together. We have journeyed from a terrifying 6,700-mile physical drift across the unforgiving Pacific Ocean to the subtle, incredibly dangerous internal drift of itching ears and algorithmic myths.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We really have. And the singular solution, the only proven way to survive the storm without losing your mind, and the only way to be a stable force for others, is dropping that heavy anchor of truth.
Because the storm is a guarantee.
Yep.
The winds will eventually howl. The only variable in the equation is whether or not we are prepared for it before it hits.
So what does this all mean for you, the person listening to this right now? It means we must be fiercely, unapologetically protective of the voices we accumulate in our daily lives.
Absolutely.
We have to take a hard, honest look at the podcasts we download, the social feeds we endlessly scroll, the advice we internalize, and we have to ask ourselves, are these voices pointing us to a solid anchor, or are they just echoing our own desires and ensuring we stay adrift?
It's a tough question to ask.
It is. Are they equipping you to face the brutal reality of the storm? Or are they just scratching an itch while your boat takes on water?
It's a vital audit of the mind.
I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over today. Something to carry with you after this audio stops playing. We've spent a lot of time talking about the necessity of dropping an anchor to secure your life.
Yeah.
But remember the physical reality of how an anchor functions. Once an anchor is dropped into the water, it does its heavy, life-saving work. Completely out of sight.
Oh, wow.
It operates in the dark, at the freezing bottom of the ocean, unseen by anyone on the surface. What invisible daily habits of truth are you dropping into the deep right now? What quiet, unseen commitments are you forging in the dark today that will hold you fast when the surface of your life inevitably gets rough? Keep listening, keep anchoring your heart, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.
Thanks for joining us on this week's Hear the Heart podcast. I hope you've been encouraged as you've listened, and that you find yourself more drawn into God and more loving towards others around you.